All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio, and on the line, we are very happy to have Dick Nichols, all the way here from Barcelona, where we've hooked him in from Barcelona. He is the European correspondent for Green Left. And one of the things that we've been doing in Green Left is we have been printing some of the kind of different sort of left-wing kind of perspectives on that have kind of been put forward in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, from the broad left parties with institutional positions in parliament to the revolutionary left. So, good morning, Dick.
Good morning to you.
Right. So you wrote in your article on March 3rd that when it comes to perspectives on Russia's invasion amongst the left within Europe, there was generally kind of united agreement, I guess, on these three kind of basic points. The demand for immediate withdrawal of Russian forces, emphasis on the role of the expansion of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, as the underlying driver of the crisis, and calls more or less detailed for de-escalation, dialogue, and a negotiated solution along the lines of the 2014 and 2015 mixed accords. However, you point out that this broad unity takes place in the context, you know, quoting you in your article, in the context of an offensive by its enemies at home. Can you elaborate on what this has meant amongst for debates amongst the left responding to Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
I think what we have to get clear is that there are the left, all components of the left, is torn between two very powerful pressures. One is to resist militarism, NATO, and the expansion of NATO on the one hand, and the other is to actually give support to the Ukrainians, because it's a very small part of the left that thinks that, that the story of Russia running a special military operation to, you know, denazify Ukraine is remotely believable. So the left is torn between these two pressures. Now, of course, the establishment parties, and this goes right through to the Social Democracy and the Greens, and not all the Greens, but certainly the Greens that are in power, so, for example, in Germany, where they're in coalition with the Social Democracy, for them, helping the Ukraine and strengthening NATO is all the same thing. We strengthen NATO, and that's what they're doing. They're using, in a sort of obscene way, they're using the Ukrainian crisis to boost military expenditure, to strengthen and tighten up their relationship between each other, to construct Europe more and more as an imperialist power with armies of its own. All the sort of things you would expect them to use a crisis for, they're doing. Then so the left parties then split on, and they fell into a bit of, some of the parties fell into this trap whereby they couldn't separate out the question of support for Ukraine, including military support and including arms, which is what they need to actually maintain their resistance, from the question of NATO. So in what you get is a broad span of positions which run from a very sort of rather neutral and useless pacifism, which is, oh, we just want peace, which is very irritating to the Ukrainians here, you can imagine why, through to, oh, well, we just have to accept an increase in defence expenditure. So the Swedish Left Party, for example, which supports the Social Democratic government in Sweden from the outside, is supporting an increase in the defence budget. But as I say, these two things quite separately. You can argue that the Ukrainians need arms just as the Kurds needed arms, and they needed the support of the United States Air Force, without that entailing you supporting any of the military alliances in which the United States is involved.
Thanks, Dick. It's Chloe here also on the call. You know, one of the things about the events one of the things we've noticed is actually the level of universal condemnation by the traditional right, and you know, it's what we often term, you know, liberal capitalist parties of Russia's invasions, but the majority of the Western capitalist world, regardless of their political orientation, have gone ahead and condemned Russia's actions. And there are, you know, obvious political differences between the left, the right, and the center on the response. Dick, how do you think this dynamic has influenced the debate that is being had on the left in Europe? You did touch on it there, but, you know, when it comes to responding to Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
Well, I think it's follows on from the answer I gave to the first question that if you react to what has happened in Ukraine, if the left parties react by saying, well, the right says that, the liberal parties say that, the pro-capitalist parties say that, we say the opposite, then you end up in a very bad position, it seems to me, which is, you know, some parties here are actually opposed to sending arms to the Ukraine. It just makes matters worse. So, for example, the French France Insoumise, France Unbowed, which is the party of the main left candidate in the French elections, French presidential elections, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, is opposed to any sort of arming of the Ukrainians. And you understand the reaction, because the arming of the Ukrainians by the NATO powers is presented as a NATO present. This is a NATO present to the Ukrainians. And the Ukrainians are all every day, Zelensky appears on television here, demanding more arms. For example, they know they're not going to get a no-fly zone, because a no-fly zone will be a direct provocation to the Russians. So what they want is surface-to-air missiles to try and break, to some degree, the Russian domination of airspace. So you get a variety of reactions to that from the various left parties. Some saying we cannot ever support an increase in arms going to, in arming any country, because this is just adds to militarism, which I think is a very bad position, because it sort of deals you out of the actually having any sort of influence and actually having any sort of discussion with the Ukrainian people themselves. So that's where we're at. And there's, of course, an ongoing debate between all the left parties about what position to come to. And I think that there's just today there's a campaign for a European-wide support for Ukraine from the left, which seems to me very good, which, you know, hits all the right points, right for the Ukrainians to get whatever support they need, both, you know, defensive weaponry, lethal weaponry, but it all covers all the other issues, refugees, of course, and an end to NATO. That is to say, it makes the point, if there had not been this permanent encroachment, an expansion of NATO, even though that was, you know, not... that was not unwelcome in Eastern Europe, where the attitude was that the main threat was coming from Russia. This campaign, this actual new campaign that's starting up, seems to me to have finally sorted out where the left should be as a separate, distinct force from all the other parties of the right.
Hmm. And actually, that gets me, I guess, into the kind of next question I was going to ask, except I'm going to sort of reframe it a bit in terms of the context of some of the things you're kind of bringing up. But I guess you've kind of brought up some of the different kind of actions that parties, I guess, on the broad left within Europe that have institutional positions within Parliament, which is actually a very different context from, you know, where we're coming from in, say, Australia, where, you know, the left actually doesn't really have any institutional positions, regardless of whether they're, you know, reformist, certainly not revolutionary or anything. But it's like, yeah, we're in a context where the Australian left actually doesn't have those institutional positions. And I guess I want to hear some of your analysis on some of those actions which you've alluded to that parties have taken. But I also want to hear your position, your perspective in the context of what you ended up with, what you ended your last point with there. You know, this question of building an independent sort of position on the left, are there actually parties who have institutional positions in Parliament, who have actually put forward positions that are, you know, actually independent of the kind of liberal capitalist sort of thing? Because I guess, yeah, in terms of the question we were sort of asking for, because there's obviously this universal condemnation of Russia's actions, it does in some sense create a pressure where it's actually almost a harder struggle for the left to build an independent position from the right on some of this stuff, but also sometimes there's also the other arrow, which is the left wants to build attempts to build an independent position by almost having the completely contrary position, which is i.e. the more minority position, which is basically almost being apologist for Russia's actions. So, yeah, I guess I want to hear some of your perspectives on some of those dynamics.
Well, I think what had to happen before we got to this point was that the Western European left had to listen to the Ukrainians and had to listen to the Russian peace movement, especially the feminist movement in Russia, which is actually the movement that is doing most against militarism and most against the war, feminist anti-war resistance. And they had to listen to what the positions were of the Ukrainian left, which is small, but there is a new Ukrainian left in, I think the main organisation is called Social Movement. And they have been a sort of friendly polemic for about a month now, and with some forces on the European left, the Western European left. For example, there was a sharp phone call, which I heard about by accident, between Podemos in Spain and Social Movement in the Ukraine, because Podemos in Spain has a purely pacifist position. And the purely pacifist position was, we are going to mobilise people against not increasing militarism, not sending arms to the increasing arms to the Ukraine, and they're in the government. They're the minor party in the government. Whereas, of course, the social movement, you can imagine, social movement, they're involved in the front line. They've got people out there risking their lives. They're in war. They're saying no. This is an impossible position, and all that means is that the left will be seen from here by all ordinary people. We're not talking about, fascist or neo-Nazi minorities. We're talking about the mass of ordinary people, ordinary working people who are volunteering or are being called up to resist this invasion. What we need is support. What we need is solidarity. And so I think getting that voice coming through from the left in Ukraine, from Social Movement and other forces, has been very instrumental in finally arriving at this position, which is only incipient. It's just beginning of a left peace movement, pan-European peace movement. But the basis for this has to be really an agreement between, or agreement or a consensus of some kind between the Russian left and the Russian peace movement and the Ukrainians, and then we can all come in from the rest of Europe in solidarity with that, and that's taken some time to work through. And I mean, if you can think of one benefit from this hideous war, it's that Eastern Europe exists. This is, I'm speaking here from Spain, right? I'm from Western Europe. There's a left there. We've got to relate to them. We've got to find out what they think. And that's been a step forward.
And actually, instead of actually going into, I guess, the sort of next question, I thought what you kind of raised there is actually quite interesting, because I guess in terms of the context of, I guess, this debate, and in fact, for both me and Chloe, I think we're actually kind of learning quite a lot in terms of this kind of discussion, because I guess one of the things, and I'm sure for a lot of people on the Australian left, who are listening to this program, I think, often our, I guess, kind of common kind of presumptions is we generally tend to sort of listen to the voices, obviously, of the Western sort of European left, because of obviously Western Europe's kind of position in world kind of capitalist politics. Their voices are often most kind of emphasized more than others. And I guess you bring up things about, the Russian sort of left, the Ukrainian left, etc. And I guess I want to sort of hear, what are some of the positions that, the Eastern European left have sort of taken in response to this invasion? And, how do some of those actual positions differ from, in more detail, even though you've alluded to it earlier, from what is the traditional kind of Western European left? Because, there is obviously a whole perspective especially since Eastern Europe has its own complex sort of history with the fall of the Soviet Union and, you know, the fact that a lot of those countries were actually subordinated to the Soviet Union at one point. Yeah, what are some of those, how did that, those dynamics, and especially in terms of Russia's own sort of expansionist sort of ambitions in the region?
Yes, you've raised a huge pile of questions there in the form of one question. I think, I mean, obviously there's a Eastern European post-Stalinist revolutionary left that is developing. It's not strong. It's strong. It's not. It's got representation in some parliaments, in the Slovenian parliament, and I think in the Croatian parliament, but don't hold me to that. But it's the major characteristic, and there's some exceptions to all of this. So I just take me. This is sort of rough generalisation. The major characteristic is they've got to reframe the language in the left in such a way that it doesn't sound like the old Stalinist, so-called, inverted commas, communist left. So what we're talking about is a new left. And, of course, there's dangers involved in that, which is that you, adapt to, liberal notions. You downplay class struggle too much. But, you know, we can't go into that in detail here. But the fundamental common characteristic, I think, of the Poles, the Slovenian left, the Bulgarian left, all these countries which were former countries of the former, countries of the former Soviet bloc, is an understanding that the Ukrainians are on the front line and they've got to be supported. And they can understand, of course, there's a specific history of the Ukraine. Of course, there is all the, you know, the horrors of the Second World War, where the most Jews that were killed in the Holocaust came from the Ukraine. All of this, which of course is used by Putin and Putin supporters, and the Communist Party of the Russian Federation too. But this new left shares that position. You know, shares the position that this is critical and that the Ukrainians have to be supported. So some interesting side debates here, which we can't, as I say, we can't go into in any sort of detail. But one is, from the Western left, you have this proposal. Well, the solution is that Ukraine be neutral. And you get an interesting response to that, which is understandable, which is, I know some comrades from social movements say, well, who are you to dictate whether we should be neutral or not? We actually happen to think we should be neutral, but that shouldn't be decided by other forces. We're in favour of dissolving neutrality in the short term and dissolving NATO, dissolving all the blocs and having people-to-people solidarity and the end of military alliances, but that's not going to happen tomorrow. These are the sort of, that's an interesting debate that comes up. Very sensitive, correctly sensitive, to the Western left saying, oh, well, you should be neutral. Finland is neutral. Sweden is neutral. You should be neutral. Not that they want to join NATO. It's just a question of democratic rights. What's the democratic right of the Ukrainians to decide their own future and their own alliances?
And I guess that, interesting enough, I'll make just one quick comment there because, this whole question around, you're probably interested in here, this whole question of Ukraine being neutral, that has actually been a bit of a discussion in some of the anti-war organising that has actually happened in Australia where, you know, there was an experience at one meeting I had where, you know, someone, basically tried to make an argument that we should make one of the demands of the rally be Ukraine be neutral. And I was sort of like, you know, my intervention at that point wasn't actually, no, that I don't think that's actually the right kind of frame of mind. Like, the country is literally, Ukraine is literally being invaded right now. And we're supposed to say that Ukraine, you should be neutral. It's almost like comes off as like a deranged, I think in my view, it almost comes off as a bit of a form of victim blaming, i.e. Ukraine's been invaded by Russia because, they wanted to join NATO. Now, obviously, there's there's obviously there is, you know, particular political problems with, you know, the established, you know, part of the established, you know, this, those who are in power in Ukraine in terms of some of their positionings on this, on this question. But it's, you know, in the context of, you know, Ukraine being invaded, you know, it's not, yeah, it's definitely not a good thing for those on the outside to be basically putting, imposing that sort of position onto Ukraine.
And that's right. And this new platform, which I mentioned, this pan-European platform in formation, they don't raise that. That demand doesn't appear. So they obviously had a big discussion about that, and they left it out. Just one other point, just in answer to your previous question, which I forgot to make, it's very much worth reading in the latest Green Left, the Declaration of Social Movement, in relation to the closing down of 11 left parties in the Ukraine by the government. The government's closed down 11 parties. Some of these are very, well, it doesn't matter whether they're small or not. They've got democratic rights. And the social movement has come out and said, well, it's these parties, some of these parties are actually, you know, aligned with Russia. They're fragments of the old Ukrainian Communist Party. And in a war situation, they operate basically as a fifth column. But that's got to be proven. That's got to be proven in court. It's not up for the government to just ban parties like that. And it's a very good statement, in my opinion, because it balances, it defends the democratic right of opinion and organisation. But it obviously makes it clear, you know, that this is limited in a war situation. The banning of these parties, of course, is being used by pro-Moscow and pro-Putin forces to say, well, here they are, the liberal West, look at them. You know, as soon as the things start, they start banning people. And there's an element of truth in that, because here we have this ban on all Russian information, all Russian information services here. You can't find anything out about what the official Russian point of view is, because that's just enemy propaganda. Oh, well, enemy propaganda, we keep it out, you know. We don't trust anybody to think for themselves about any of this. But as I say, I recommend that statement as a very mature statement of people who are on the front line of a war, and yet they're still thinking clearly about the question of democratic rights for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're getting, I was thinking we could, do a bit of a conclusion, conclude, I guess, this kind of interview, but I guess a concluding question I sort of felt, that I guess should be asked, and I guess you've kind of alluded to it in terms of like, to tie in all the sort of different kind of trends that you've sort of brought up, I kind of want to hear, I guess in terms of like, hear some of your perspectives, I guess, on the kind of way forward in terms of some of these kind of contradictions, because you've pointed out that, I guess, in terms of developing, I guess, a better European left, united sort of European left position, you know, the Western European left has to be able to, has to listen to the East in a certain, in that certain respect. But I guess, yeah, what would, you know, in a sense, a dynamic that actually unite, you know, a position that sort of unites, you know, all the different sections of the Western European left with those of the Eastern European left. What do you think is sort of like, in terms of your perspective, a kind of way forward in terms of this, I guess, current sort of crisis and situation?
Well, let me just counsel against any easy solutions here, because we're in for a wave of right-wing reactionary nationalist sentiment across the whole of Europe, and a wave of militarism, increase in defence expenditure. Those people are the enemy. It feels like pre-World War One here. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate, but that's the way that people talk about the Russians, and don't bother to make any sort of differentiation between the oligarchy and those in power, the elites, and the mass of Russian people, even though all the polls are showing that Putin has majority support so far, but there's an interesting growth in opposition to the war, especially amongst young people. The interesting statistic is the greatest opposition to the war is coming from young people, and they don't cop the way the older older generations cop, you know, all this language about where anti-fascism, all the language that came from the Second World War, or the Great Patriotic War, as it's called in Russia. So I think this, the way forward will be an actual process of resisting this wave of reaction, which will come, which is already coming. Then, on the basis of the resistance to the war inside Russia, on the basis of supporting the Ukrainians, and on the basis of opposing all this nationalism, which is also in the Ukraine. I mean, you read some of the stuff that comes out of the Ukraine, they just talk about the Russians as kind of beast people. All of this filth is going to have to be lived through, and if the European left can collaborate, create a movement that's strong enough, and act with clear solidarity, coordinated solidarity campaigns and pro-peace campaigns against military alliances like NATO, well, against NATO, that will be the basis on which we go forward. And though it's going to be horrible in the short and medium term, just talking to young people from the different European countries, which you do, which I do, you know that there's a basis there for that. There's an actual human social basis for coming out of this horrible situation. But as I say, it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that, Dick. And I guess it's that task. We also have that task in Australia right now, although of a different context, especially in because of, there is this real push for militarism from the Morrison government, but it's not necessarily in response to to the actions of Russia, although they are trying to conveniently take advantage of it. But it's in response to this, obviously, this whole issue of China, which is clearly, basically going to be a huge, massive source of reaction for all the kind of Western sort of capitalist parties. And I think, as for the left, it's going to be very important that we build opposition to this, and it is going to be a very challenging road for us. And I think, there's all these challenges are going to happen in Europe as well. So, thank you very much, Dick.
Oh, well, I look forward, just one last note, just to say goodbye, but I look forward to Socialist Alliance doing a good, strong anti-Khaki election campaign and against all this filth. And I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Dick.
Thank you, Dick.
Bye-bye.